This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You are listening to the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state-of-the-art L-shaped studios at beautiful and serene Hoholoon Plaza in Vancouver, British Columbia. Greg Phillips and Nick Toomer are the hard-traveling fanhounds.
Our traveling fanboys.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
What the hell just happened?
In Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We have increased our security in recent weeks. Our new butler, Hoholoon, for whom the plaza is named, has been doing a magnificent job, especially after we assured him that Noam Dar is welcome in, near, or around the hard-traveling studios.
The no-good Noam Dar. Get the nomenclature correct, please.
The Noamclature, if you will. Mm-hmm. And even if you won't. That's right, folks. Walking Dead month is over. It's in the past. And tonight, we are actually recording on Halloween night. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure both of us are wearing our most luxurious Halloween outfit.
Yes, of course.
I, of course, am dressed as Michael Landon. Mm-hmm. And you, Nick, are dressed, I believe, as the bearded guy from Highway to Heaven.
Ah, I thought you were going to say dressed as myself, urinating on your face, but that's neither here nor there.
That's neither here nor there. That's telling tales out of skewel, quite frankly.
It is.
oh, boy. I wish I had Michael Landon's, by the way.
Yeah, I bet you wish you had just about anybody's hair right now.
Well, that's true. Not anybody. I wouldn't want Art Garfunkel's hair.
I don't know.
He's bald. He's balding too on top now, mm-hmm. but he's got the like puffed out hair in the back, so that's not a good look either.
What's wrong with that?
No, it's not a good look.
Says who?
Well, that's true. It could be even worse.
You know how much trim Art Garfunkel probably caught in his day?
You're saying that Art Garfunkel pulled a lot of trim?
I'm saying he pulled a lot of trim. That's what I'm saying.
Bridge of troubled water indeed.
Art Garfunkel.
Oh, that's what they called him in the day. Mm-hmm. That's what the gossip magazines called him.
The ladies called him. They knew. What the hell are we doing?
I don't know. What are we doing?
What are we doing? You've beaten it into the gut, into the ground.
Oh, boy. Well, we are here to return to our normal recording schedule, Nick. God, it feels like it's been forever since we've done a normal schedule. And we're back, though. And we are back with Hard Travelers for Hire. It is, of course, our continuing journey, movie by movie, through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We are revisiting the entire thing, starting from Iron Man in our first episode. And tonight, we are actually reaching 2017's Black Panther, right? Or is it 2018 at this point?
Yeah, it was February. Was it not February of this year?
It was. You're right. It was February.
Yeah.
I guess it was. The years are running together for me. Black Panther is the point. Black Panther is out. It came out in February of this year. We are here to talk about it. We are almost up to date, Nick. We're rapidly reaching the end of our hard traveling journey when it comes to Hard to Hire.
Yeah, we are. I think next time out will be in January when we're taking a look at Tim Capel's favorite film, Avengers: Infinity War, and then we'll have Ant-Man and the Wasp in February, and then we will have Captain Marvel month, I think, sometime around there. And basically, we're stretching it out until the release of Avengers 4 in May of next year, when we're going to culminate the entire thing. So,
quite frankly,
I'm not really sure how we're stretching it out, and I'm too lazy to look at the schedule at the moment. So just take my word for it. We're going to stretch it out artificially as long as we possibly can.
I suggest you all just quit worrying about it and enjoy the movie.
Yes, I mean, I'm sure all our listeners are very concerned about, man, how are they going to stretch it out until May? I'm so worried. I'm going to lose sleep about it tonight.
Some might. Some of our more obsessive, compulsive listeners. I don't know. There's probably some out there that care. Surely something we've done over the last 2 years has made an impact on someone's life.
Oh, God. Don't, let's not. Okay, let's avoid the subject.
Okay, never mind. Not that guy.
Not you, sir. You know who you are.
He's a good man. Yeah, you're a good man. Yeah. We appreciate you.
Yes. Never mind. Never mind. That's a joke too inappropriate for even I to make.
Put the bunny in the box.
Oh.
Hey, whoever gets that reference I just made, if you let me know on Twitter at 8652, I won't do much for you, but I'll give you a shout out on next week's show if I remember.
Which means he won't do anything for you.
Shut your mouth. Well, as everybody knows that has ever listened to Hard Travelers for Hire, it works very much the same way that Off the Page does.
Virtually identically.
We will pull up this movie. Right now, I am streaming it on Netflix on Roku 3 or 4. I don't know what it is. It's one of the Rokus. And I've got it paused at 0000, all zeros. And I've got the closed captions turned on. We are going to watch not the entire movie. We're just going to use it as a guide to help us out and spur the conversation on. If you'd like to follow along at home, if you are listening to this at home, feel free to pull it up on your streaming device, pull up your DVD, Blu-ray, however you're watching the movie, and join us, and we will count you in. You can pause the podcast now if you'd like to locate your copy, and we are going to count you in and hit play in 3, 2, 1, play. This is rated PG-13 for prolonged sequences of action violence.
Well, see, I'm at the end of the narration.
Well, mine, there was a delay for some reason. What does it matter, Nick? Quite frankly, who gives a shit? Well, I think it does give a shit about this movie. A lot of people.
Yes, it made a...
Are you seeing a meteorite fly through the sky right now?
No, I'm seeing the meteorite strike in the continent of Africa to form the great nation of Wakanda.
Mm, yes. So, before we get into the... well, let's talk about this intro real quick. This is taking a very Thor-like approach, if you remember that movie, to setting up the mythos and the backstory of the Black Panther. But it's doing it, to me, in a more clever way where it's a father telling a story to a son, basically. And the child kind of using his
own imagination. Oh, you mean exactly like it was in Thor with a father telling a story to son?
To a young child, not a grown adult man.
No, the opening framing sequence of Thor was Odin telling the story to young Thor and young Loki.
Do you want me to just tell you what I really think then, Nick?
Yes.
It's telling a more ending story in a more interesting way.
That's fair. You have the right to your opinion, even if it's wrong.
And a really cool sequence here. You're seeing kind of the passage of time.
I want you to say what you mean, Greg. Don't shy away from controversy. As we all know, you have a reputation for doing.
Well, quite frankly, that may be the case. But nonetheless, I am indeed embracing the opening sequence here. Good way of getting the backstory out of the way. No one wants to be bogged down with all this backstory over the course of an entire film.
In terms of the mythos, though, it actually also reminded me a little bit of the opening credits of Green Lantern, if you remember that, what they had, the narration of where Tomar Rae was trying to lay out basically the entire premise in the course of like 2 minutes or whatever. And, you know, your enjoyment of the film was pretty much going to live or die on that 2 minutes and whether or not you bought it. And some people did. And a lot of people didn't.
Yes. And in this case, virtually everyone bought it.
Right.
Very well done here. And now we're doing another flashback sequence where we're going to the early 90s, 1992, in fact, love the aesthetic here. I love the way it looks, the way it's shot. Mm-hmm. It looks like 1992. Everybody's dressed appropriately for the time. It is a very important cultural time in America, mm-hmm. and very well executed here. This whole scene is very, very tense as we see the King of Wakanda show up here. So this is a good opportunity, Nick, to talk about a little bit of the setup for this film. Black Panther is a character that I would argue very strongly that a lot of people didn't know anything about before this film. Fair to say?
Yeah, I would argue that his predominant defining feature in the mind of most people anyway, prior to this was that he was black. I mean, and that sounds reductive in some sense, but really, for the longest time, especially dating back to the 70s and whatnot, black characters in comics were few and far between. And so those few that there were developed, you know, pretty intense followings that date back decades to this point. John Stewart being an example, you know, black, and of course over here in Marvel, Black Panther being another example. And so a Black Panther film, while he was undoubtedly probably a C-list character at best, has always felt like something that probably should have happened a lot sooner than it did.
Yeah, great shot here. The first time we get to see the Black Panther suit worn by King T'Chaka, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Instantly. One of the best costume designs in the entire MCU, in my opinion.
Give it to me. I need to see it. Show me that face. Where's it at? There it is. Woo! Sorry.
What face?
The lazy eye.
How far ahead are you?
You see, now that I have seen the movie already, subsequent viewings, even in the young viewings, I can see just the earliest hint of lazy eye coming in.
Good Lord, man.
What?
Anyway.
For God's sake. What is the lazy eye? What's wrong with lazy eye? Shawn Michaels has the lazy eye.
Shawn Michaels is a Hall of Famer.
No, this is the Black Panther. He's a king.
He's a king. And all you can talk about is a lazy eye.
Oh, for God.
For shame.
Man has a lazy eye.
He rules his own country.
I think you're a little sensitive to this lazy eye discussion. I'm going to have to take a good close look at your eyes next time I see you.
Oh, you know, you sound a lot like the villain from this week's Supergirl.
Oh, for God's sake. How so? I'm talking about people who have lazy eye.
Yeah, but you're saying, well, if you take offense to what I'm saying about people with lazy eyes, maybe you have a lazy eye.
I think you might.
Regardless of the status of one's Forrest Whitaker eye, the scene here is awesome. To me, the design they went with the Black Panther costume, whether worn here or the new one, the more modern one worn later in the film by T'Challa, is just awesome. The MCU has done a good job with their costumes in general, but this has to be one of the best.
Yeah, this is great. And this is a little nice touch here is, you know, we see they're largely the same, this version of the costume and the one we're going to see throughout the film with T'Challa, but there's enough subtle differences, whether it's the gold right. on the spikes or whether it's adding the kingly like robe, like the sash thing over his shoulder. A lot of different mm-hmm. touches here that make it really unique.
And this is setting up a great callback later in the film. This is a very interesting you mentioned the framing sequence at the beginning, but really this is kind of a narrative framing sequence. We see this shot in 1992 LA will come back later in the film and have a pretty big impact, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I have to worry about spoilers, you know, here in a movie that's
No.
Going
but
on
but when you see it. When you see it at the end of the film, it really does bring the whole thing full circle. It's also vital to the exploration of Killmonger, who, of course, is one of the great Marvel villains, as we'll get into during the course of this show. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, a Black Panther movie made sense to add diversity, needed diversity to the MCU.
Sorry, and here you go. They're using the news footage to like kind of catch up briefly on the events of Civil War that were ultra relevant to Black Panther, that being the death of his father and the capture of Helmet Zemo.
Indeed. So anyway, so it was a movie that seemed like it needed to happen, but you know, the character itself was largely off the cultural radar. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people knew that his name was T'Challa. I don't think a lot of people knew anything about Wakanda necessarily. So this movie has a lot of heavy lifting to do right out of the gate. I bring that up to bring up why that opening sequence was necessary, because this is really a world-building movie. It's not just a movie like Captain America or Iron Man that is – or certainly, you know, you could argue Iron Man, but certainly it's not Captain America. It's not an Avengers movie where you're operating in a known world.
Right.
You're coming in and you're not just establishing a new character. You're establishing a new character and an entirely new location, an entirely new setting that is not merely a physical place, but a character unto itself. Mm-hmm. That's something that we said all the way back on our Off the Page about Tim Burton's Batman, about how Gotham City was a living and breathing entity. And in this movie, they make Wakanda, and it was vital that they did this, but they make Wakanda this living, breathing entity, a location, a city, an economy, a society, unlike anything else we've seen in the MCU to this point. Certainly far different from the most common MCU setting of New York. Mm-hmm. So I really think that this movie had a lot to do to deliver, and amazingly, it checked off all the boxes, and it immediately drops us in and makes us, first of all, believe Wakanda to the point where people were chanting Wakanda in theaters and outside of theaters when this movie came out, and thus believing the characters that inhabit Wakanda. So there's a lot going on here, and I know that it was this movie, Nick, that actually fostered a love of the character of Black Panther in me that made me want to seek out stuff that we've reviewed on this show, both the C. Coates and the Christopher Priest Black Panther runs.
So, oh, and don't forget the BET television series as well.
That too. So there's a lot of history here with the Black Panther, and if you delve into his history for hardcore comic fans, there are tons of great Black Panther stories, largely from Chris Priest, but others as well. It just stands out that he's had all this cool stuff before, but just now are people really becoming aware of it on a mainstream, you know, non-niche manner, which is really cool.
Absolutely. And this is the first action sequence of the film here, and it's a standout. Anytime the Black Panther suit is in action in any of the movies at this point, Civil War, Black Panther, Infinity War, always a standout. Just the way I don't know who does the stunts for this movie, but the way he moves in the suit, sound design is something I've talked about before, where some of the other superheroes in the MCU, everything about the Black Panther movement is silent, and like it's just, you get the impression that he is just moving so smoothly that there's no need for wasted motion or wasted energy, and you get to see a glimpse of that here. So this is an outstanding way to open the action sequences in the film.
Yeah, this is also the sequence that introduces us to T'Challa and also to his two closest allies, or two of his three closest allies, which are Nakia, his on-again, off-again girlfriend of sorts, who is one of the war dogs, which is they're kind of like I don't know how to describe them, Nick. They're like kind of covert operatives, I guess you would say. Danai Gurira, who is, of course, Michonne on The Walking Dead, is Okoye here, who is representing the Dora Milaje, which, if you listen to our show and you haven't read any Black Panther comics, you may remember the Dora Milaje from the Christopher Priest Black Panther comics. So a creation of his that is kind of like the royal guard for Wakanda, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the King's Guard, I think, is essentially what it's supposed to be. But there, in this movie, they depict there as being more of them. So I think maybe perhaps it's supposed to be a combination of King's Guard and a small military force as well.
Yep. So we're already establishing characters. And what's interesting here is Nakia is a great character in this movie. She gets a lot of cool scenes where you do get the sense of this mutual love and respect between her and T'Challa. However, I would say that she was kind of – Lupita Nyong'o is the actor, and she was getting a lot of buzz going into this film, deservedly so. But I would argue that Okoye at times, flirts with stealing this movie. There's another character that arguably steals it even more.
I was about to say, yeah, I would, if I were going to give that to a character that isn't T'Challa, it would not be Okoye. So.
I would say Okoye is up there for me, though. I think Okoye is one that got a lot of people talking.
Okoye would be up there, but if you're ranking the supporting characters, it's like there's one, there's number one, and then there's a gap, and then there's a, you know, like you can start ranking them from there.
Yes,
for me anyway.
That's fair. That's sort of fair. I mean, I don't think the gap's as big as you're suggesting. Right. I would put Nakia third by a pretty good margin, but
depends on where you fall about with M'Baku. Who plays a small, outstanding role.
Memorable part, yes. That's great. Okoye is awesome here, and what I love about her is she is the most, I would argue that to this point in the MCU, she is the most self-assured, confident, assertive female character that they've put on screen. She doesn't have any moments of weakness, any moments of... I guess the sort of vulnerability that has marked even the Black Widow in these MCU movies, she is at probably a bigger badass than T'Challa, to be honest. She is completely a force of nature, basically. And it's a very important role to have in the MCU because we haven't really seen that warrior woman in the MCU to this point. She's kind of like a big Barda type character to use a DC analogy. And on the other hand, Nakia, of course, is kind of the stealthy spy, basically. And here we meet the person that does steal the movie as a supporting character. And that, of course, is Shuri, Black Panther's sister.
Yes.
Played by Letitia Wright. Mm-hmm. And she is awesome. You want to talk about a force of nature in this movie, Nick? She pretty much takes every scene that she's in and owns it immediately. She's funny. She's self-assured. She's incredibly confident, bordering on cocky, mm-hmm. and is a brilliant scientist to a degree that she thinks, as we find out in Infinity War, she thinks that that Bruce Banner and Tony Stark are kind of dealing in old technology, basically. She's just incredible in this movie.
Absolutely she is. And as you said, she threatens to steal the movie. And when you're talking about Okoye being one of the most self-assured characters, I was applying that to Shuri even more because,
yeah.
Man, her level of confidence. Interesting that in Infinity War, you mentioned her thinking that Bruce Banner and Tony Stark were dealing in old technology, but she doesn't actually share any scenes with Tony Stark. And that's one of the things about I am most hopeful in Avengers 4 that we get is scenes with Robert Downey Jr. and Letitia Wright together, because those two characters should have instant chemistry, but we will see.
Yeah, it's rare that you get a character that has the potential to emasculate Tony,
mm-hmm.
and Shuri definitely has that capability. Very, very tremendous performance. I don't know that I had seen her in a movie before this. I'm going to look up her filmography and see if I had... Actually, I have not encountered her in anything. None of the shows that she's been in. She's been in Black Mirror and Doctor Who, and I have not seen those. So she instantly came out of the gates and knocked a home run out in her first, you know, kind of major film. So, yeah, great stuff from Letitia Wright. And here we are introduced to the villain of the piece. A character with the rather unfortunate name in the comics of Killmonger.
Yes, here in the movie, fortunately, that's just a nickname. It is not.
Yes, he is Eric Killmonger Stevens.
Right.
AKA N'Jotica. Did I say that right?
I do not know.
Never mind.
You're not gonna. I'm not falling for your trap, Greg. That was a nice attempt to bait me into trying to pronounce that, but I will not. I will not stoop to your level, sir.
I've not conversed with Killmonger.
You've not conversed with. Never mind. I'm not gonna do it.
Telltale. Now,
N'Jotica.
That's like JR saying it.
Yeah.
Oh! Yeah, he's
Shinsuke Nakamura.
I'm trying to find the name of the guy that plays Ulysses Claw. Andy Serkis, duh.
Hirooki Goto.
As Ulysses Claw did appear briefly in Civil War, was it?
Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, yes. So Serkis reprises his role here and gives just a... You know, it's almost a shame that he's killed off so early in this movie because yes. he's so entertaining every time he's on the screen.
Yes, he is. That was pretty cool.
Just a lot of goofy, energetic charisma here. But Michael B. Jordan is, I think, we'll talk about this more at the end of the movie, but a lot of people were saying he walked away with this movie.
Yes.
Playing, arguably, you can make a strong case. I don't know if I'm ready to go there, but he's definitely in the running. You can make a strong case that he's the Marvel Cinematic Universe's best villain on a one-movie basis.
You could make that argument. I'm not sure that I would, but it is certainly feasible. He is easily, like... top five. I don't think there's any question about that.
Oh, yeah. I would put him comfortably in the top three. Killmonger is a character I don't... Again, I know nothing about the character in the comics, Nick. I don't know if you have more knowledge about him.
I don't.
But in this movie, Eric Killmonger is... He is everything that the early MCU movies lacked with villains. He is three-dimensional. He is interesting, he is flawed, he is borderline heroic at times. He is a villain that you can truly understand his perspective, even if you don't agree with his actions.
Right.
And even if he takes things too far, it is hard not to have some level of sympathy for him, even if you realize that what he's doing is wrong and he has to be taken down. You know, it's that great... The great question of the great heels in wrestling, you know, the ones that those heels that are there's heels that are great heels because they're great at being booed, and then there's those heels that are so good at what they do that you kind of they're kind of in the right and you kind of want to cheer them. Mm-hmm. So this would be the latter. He is, you know, we've seen Michael B. Jordan in tremendous already in his career, numerous roles. Of course, he's Adonis Creed, mm-hmm. about to be in the sequel to Creed, which is a great movie and a great great role for him.
And of course, he was Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four 2015 reboot.
Of course, he was. But this is the role that he was born with, in my opinion. This is one of those Chris Evans as Captain America, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. He's just perfect for that role of Eric Killmonger. And that's not to take anything away from the star of this show, which is Chadwick Boseman, who is T'Challa, the Black Panther, here undergoing one of the rites of passage in the Kingdom of Wakanda. And this is just what I was talking about earlier, Nick. This is such a great, different look at another culture, at another society, and truly respecting it and honoring it, and showing us that it's not your run-of-the-mill superhero movie. It's not your run-of-the-mill even MCU movie. Wonderful stuff here. Would you agree?
I absolutely would. You know, you get to see a little bit of that culture, like you said, some intriguing looks at the different tribes of Wakanda. They all have different things that set them apart visually, so it implies that you're not dealing with one nation that is, you know, virtually identical from place to place. There are different cultures, subcultures within this culture. So lots of interesting stuff going on here visually in this scene.
And in that way, it's kind of similar to... We talk about world building. That's a big thing. With any world building situation is establishing a lived-in world where people are unique and different, and there are subsets. There are different cultures. You think about it with Star Wars or Star Trek. In the comic books, you think about it with Green Lantern or something like. It's such a cool and necessary thing to establish that not everyone looks the same, not everyone acts the same, talks the same, behaves the same. So a really, really good way of establishing Shuri already being awesome here, and Forrest Whitaker You're speaking of eyes, Nick. Forrest Whitaker is here playing the advisor of sorts, who we've met in the comics actually in a much different form in our reading. Mm-hmm. And this cast, I'm just looking through the cast list here. This really is a who's who of genre films and also mainstream films. When you're looking at names, I'm looking at some of the names here. We already mentioned Andy Serkis, Forrest Whitaker.
Yep, Angela Bassett.
Yeah, Angela Bassett as mm-hmm. Ramonda, mm-hmm. T'Challa's mother. Winston Duke as M'Baku. He's been in a lot of movies in recent years, but he's awesome. Awesome in this.
Mm-hmm.
As a
Sterling K. Brown?
Yes, who's got quite a bit of
buzz.
Buzz, thank you. Why couldn't I not think of the buzz?
I don't know why you couldn't. I mean, you are a PR man. All you do is sit around and think of buzzwords all day anyway.
That's a lazy attack on my profession.
A lazy yet accurate attack on your profession.
And the star of Get Out, Daniel Kaluuya, as Wookiee.
He's in this?
Say what?
He's in this? When? Where? Who? Who is Wakabi?
Wakabi is T'Challa's confidant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
His best friend. The head of security of the border tribe, who? Serving as the first line of defense for Wakanda. Mm-hmm. He's also Okoye's betrothed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wikipedia.
I added the last part. Wikipedia didn't even have that.
You would never use the word betrothed. I don't even
know. I just did.
No.
Look up Wikipedia.
You read
look
that
up.
Directly. I'm not looking
look
up anything.
On
I'm not looking up anything. I don't have to look up anything. Wikipedia is open
jealous.
Source. You could delete it right now and it
you're
wouldn't be
jealous.
There. No.
You're jealous.
No.
Because I'm a professional in the public
betrothed.
Relations world.
Betrothed.
And you're just a
you're so
lazy drone that's typing what they tell you to type. I have to come up with words.
You
I'm damn a wordsmith,
right.
Nick.
You damn right. I have to work a lot less hard for more money. That's awesome.
And you can tell that you have to work a lot less hard.
That's right. Oh, that's awesome.
You know what would help you work hard, Nick?
What's that?
And not be less hard?
Oh,
Blue
God.
Chew.
Blue Chew.
One of the sponsors of Hard Traveling Fanboys.
And the official sponsor of the Tony Schiavone Halloween.
That's right, Nick. You know, I can't help but look at all these tout athletic people here having their contest, and I'm thinking, I want to be like that. And the best way I can get like that, Nick, Blue Chew.
Yeah, I mean, because even if you won't have rock hard abs, you'll have a rock hard, well, penis.
Nonetheless, oh, the bear hug.
Classic.
This bear. Is, by the way, we have, I don't know, we're talking over this awesome scene. This is actually, controversially, my favorite fight scene in the entire movie.
I don't know that that's that kind of, well, I think I like the first, they do this, a similar scene later where it's Killmonger and T'Challa in the same setting, without mm-hmm. powers, without suit. Mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite fight scene in the movie.
Because
I would argue that as great as the movie is, and as good as the action is throughout, the closing fight scene between T'Challa and Killmonger is a little underwhelming because it suffers from a lot of the same things that early MCU movies suffered from, in that when you put two characters who look so similar into a big throwdown at the end, it becomes difficult to visually distinguish, and there's just there's an element of sameness to it, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Because of what you're looking at. And also, if I'm remembering correctly, there was a while the CGI is very good throughout this movie, it's not great towards the end, especially as it relates to the movie's usage of green screen. Because I remember the entire closing part of that fight scene being set against a big green screen that didn't look great.
This also may be the only example I can remember of a climactic
tap out.
Big budget movie fight ending with a tap out.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
And not only that, but other than Lethal Weapon, the first one, a triangle choke. As you remember, Nick, the legendary actor Gary Busey mm-hmm. Is choked unconscious by Martin Riggs in the first Lethal Weapon movie with a triangle choke.
Yes, all the things you love best in life. You had Mel Gibson, you had triangle chokes, you had Gary Busey. What more could Greg Phillips ask for?
And then in the real version of the movie, Gary Busey stands up and attempts to shoot Riggs, only to be shot himself, I believe, by Murdoch. In my version of the movie, Gary Busey stands up and picks up a steam pipe and throws it through Riggs and then delivers a one-liner. And it would be the perfect movie, would it not?
And then you take that movie in your version and put it into a lockbox.
Under my opponent's plan, all their houses would be burned to the ground.
Burned to the ground.
Anyway.
Oh, what foreshadowing.
Oh, Lord.
The nicest, the best tense.
Anyway. What about this? This is so cool. They're even introducing elements of the supernatural here with the
heart-shaped herb.
Which Nirvana wrote a great song about heart-shaped herb. You should check it out. And the way that the Black Panthers all gain their powers through the herb, basically through nature itself, or rather the supernatural in some ways. But yeah, going through the actors list again, Michael B. Jordan, we already mentioned, Lupita Nyong'o, incredible actress, Danai Gurira, Martin Freeman as Everett Ross, who was one of our favorite characters from the comics, if you recall, another creation of Christopher Priest, who this movie really owes a lot to.
Yes, sadly no missing pants for Everett Ross in this
in this movie. There's still hope.
In the sequel. The sequel has to open with Everett Ross talking about how his pants are missing. And that becomes the mystery of the film as we reveal through flashbacks slowly how his pants got lost.
I have to imagine that that Christopher Priest was smiling watching this movie, seeing all of these things come to life that he created, things that he probably never thought would be brought to life in such a way.
I bet he'd be smiling a lot more if he got a fat royalty check for it, but that's neither here nor there.
Absolutely.
I don't know that he didn't, for the record. I'm not
I don't know that he did. I don't know that he didn't.
No, Jim Starlin didn't. I'll put it that way.
Right, exactly.
He's been very vocal about that. So I would assume, granted, creator contracts changed a lot between the 70s and 1998 or whatever, but,
Yeah, I would hope that they've made that right, but who knows? Who knows, really? We still don't know how creators are paid for Marvel Unlimited.
We don't.
Seemingly no one.
Honestly, we don't really care. Let's be honest. We really don't. If we cared, we wouldn't use it.
We might borrow it from a friend.
Okay. WWE Network, same thing.
Now, WWE wrestlers are independent contractors. We've never even heard the word employee.
I'm not familiar with what an employee or a benefit is.
Say, Nick, speaking of which, what are your thoughts on traveling to Saudi Arabia for next week's HTF?
Well, it depends on who our travel companions are going to be. So if we can make it down to Tampa, Florida, and catch certain flights, perhaps I'll be more excited about it than you would think. And also, I will take this opportunity to say that just in case we do make that trip, I would like to take a moment and point out how great the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is. I've always been a big fan of pretty much everything they have going on there, from their, from their culture to their outstanding sports teams. I mean, my Lord, have you ever seen a game of Hi-Li? It's incredible. The amount of skill it takes, and the way they repress women.
No, but I've had a Miller High Life.
I'm a big fan of that as well. So everything they got going on over there in Saudi Arabia, two thumbs up for me. Hey, and there is clearly no reason to strangle and decapitate me.
Do you know what's even better, though, than the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Nick?
Nothing. There is nothing better than that.
No, you're wrong about that. Blue Chew.
That's your opinion, and you can express that opinion. I will not be joining you in that opinion.
See, it's easy for you to kowtow now, but wait until the makers of Blue Chew decapitate people, then.
Well, I can survive if they cut off that head. I can't survive if Saudi Arabia cuts off my actual head. That would suck.
You're not using it anyway.
I mean, which one?
Yes.
Yes, that's the answer.
That was a wildly inappropriate diversion of our show.
Well, I just praised a kingdom that you know, brutally murdered a journalist, so it's not like she's much worse
than
me.
I feel like we need to use Owen voice right now to explain the last bit.
No, we did not need to explain the last bit. Let's move forward.
So, director Ryan Coogler, we haven't talked about, who was Michael B. Jordan's director in
Creed.
In Creed.
And in Fruitvale Station, which I haven't
Fruitvale
seen.
Fruitvale Station, which I haven't seen. One of
many, yes, one of many films on the proverbial list.
And the literal Netflix list, I believe. At least it was on Netflix.
I think it's off Netflix now. It was on my queue, but then it I never watched it. So.
Well,
hey, let me tell you about this, though. I did watch a movie that has Chadwick Boseman in it on Netflix not too long ago.
Oh, yeah? What was it called?
It was called Bow Down to the King or something like that.
Yes, that's on my list as well.
Yeah. So he played – what's interesting is Chadwick Boseman – is not from Africa, based on my understanding of things.
But
in Bow Down to the King, he plays another person from Africa whose sister has moved to America and has gone missing. And he comes, and it's basically Black Taken. He shows up, and he's doing the Black Panther accent, and he rolls around Los Angeles beating the ever-living shit out of people with a chain.
That sounds awesome.
Yes, it is. I'm not going to lie to you.
That sounds awesome.
He bends down the street and steals a bicycle chain and wraps it around his hand and walks around Los Angeles for the next 9 minutes beating the shit out of people with it.
There is nothing about that.
While doing the accent.
That.
It's great.
There's nothing about that that doesn't sound amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's not as fast as Taken. Like, it tries to hit more dramatic beats than the standard, you know, kidnap movie does. And his sister is actually dead the entire time. That's not a spoiler. They reveal that pretty early. That's not like a big twist or anything. So there's no, like, happy ending. But he does just beat the shit out of people for an extended period of time.
That's awesome. At any point in the movie, does he hold a man and his family hostage?
And shoot the wife in the leg?
Shoot the wife in the leg. Or just give her a Charlie horse with his chained fist?
No, he does not. He does not do that, and it would have been a better movie if he had.
Nonetheless, Ryan Coogler does an outstanding job in his first superhero movie. We knew he could direct big-budget films.
Right.
We knew he could direct popcorn films, which he largely did with Creed, although it's more than just a popcorn film.
Yeah,
you get what I'm saying. He's just awesome here. The effects are great. Look at this like living hologram that is beyond the technology that we've even seen in the MCU to this point. The overall plot here of Killmonger and Claw trying to sort of mine the Wakandan technology, and as we find out, Killmonger's motives are much deeper than that. Killmonger wants to reclaim what he feels is his, the kingdom of Wakanda, and also bring it to the world's attention in a lot of ways. And you know, as I'm describing that, Nick, that's kind of a story that we've seen with other monarchy stories and comics, right? Primarily the one that I'm thinking of is Aquaman.
That story kind of told over and over again in Aquaman.
Right. It's almost like Aquaman's version of Ragnarok or whatever, that story that gets told by every creative team that takes over. Black Panther, in this case, is doing that, and it's the first time we've seen it in a superhero movie, really, that I can think of, Nick, unless you can think of any other examples.
No, I can't.
Yeah, and they nail that, all the emotional beats of that, plus the added socio-political aspects here, which it's impossible to discuss this movie and not to bring that up. That this is a movie very much of its time, which is now. It is the most, it feels the most modern and the most current of any superhero movie, because so much of what it is doing and what it is saying is speaking to a group of people that have never really been spoken to before on the big screen in a superhero epic. And this is what people want when they want Renchen. They want their stories told, and they want people that they can identify with and look to. And that's what this movie is doing in large part. It's tackling issues of economic poverty, obvious race issues, obvious issues of societal hierarchy, you know, and cultural misunderstanding, cultural appropriation. It's I think for a large portion of the audience, Killmonger is kind of the the voice of the audience in a lot of ways at times in this movie. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, like you said earlier, it's one of those things where a lot of what he's saying makes a lot of sense and it lands with the audience, and it's not one of those – it's one of those things where we never view him as the mustache-twirling villain, you know?
No, no.
Especially once his backstory and his motivation is revealed. You may question his actions, mm-hmm. but his belief and his justification is never in question, I don't think. He has noble motives, albeit, you know, misguided at times.
And with that, it would be very easy for the audience to turn on the protagonist of this movie, but it never happens. Mm-hmm. Because Chadwick Boseman imbues him with a humanity that jumps off the screen. T'Challa is, he's not a one-dimensional, to use my favorite Tim Capel, one of my favorite Tim Capel lines, golly gee hokum superhero. He's not here to speak in cliches. He's not here to say perish forbid. He is here. He's a human being. He is a person, and he feels empathy for others. And that's what makes him suited to be a king. Not the fact that he's smart. Not the fact that he's strong and capable and fast and has these abilities. It's the fact that he feels that empathy and that he has the courage to think that just because I am the leader of this country doesn't mean that I'm right about everything, and that maybe other people could have ideas and that I might be wrong about something. And that is something that T'Challa has that never leaves through the course of this movie. He doesn't think that he has all the answers for everything. And he's humbled over the course of the movie. When he does feel that way, he gets humbled, and it reminds him that, you know what, the old ways are not always the best ways. And because he's a character that genuinely changes and grows as the movie goes on, it keeps the audience, or at least in my case it did, it keeps me from turning on him and siding with Killmonger, because while Killmonger's ideas, a lot of them are solid and accurate and true, T'Challa can take those ideas, filter them through a humanity that Killmonger lacks, an empathy that Killmonger lacks. It's an incredible performance by Boseman and a great job by Coogler and the writers.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. You know, Killmonger's upbringing and the events that he has suffered have caused him to view the world a bit more harshly, mm-hmm. And in more drastic terms than T'Challa does. So it's one of those things that we get to see how that plays out throughout the movie, but there's never a moment where you completely dismiss what Killmonger is saying. So this is
right.
It sets up an interesting philosophical battle throughout the rest of the movie.
Yes, it's much more interesting than just putting Black Panther, good guy, against some villain, bad guy. You
against
know?
The
against let's just Claw, for instance.
Yeah, Monger. Excuse me, the Ironmonger. You all right there?
I'm all right. This is my favorite. Yeah, the Ironmonger.
Just imagine, if they had a monger in this film, his name would be the Black Monger. It would.
And what's the guy's name from Ant-Man?
Yellowjacket.
Yellowjacket, yeah. So those characters didn't work because, in my view, I know some disagree, but in my view, those characters didn't work because they're just bad guys. As much as I enjoy Ulysses Claw, he would not have worked as the bad guy of this movie for that reason.
No.
Because there wouldn't have been that interesting philosophical battle. And ultimately, Black Panther would not have learned anything from Ulysses Claw, from fighting Ulysses Claw. Black Panther as a character is better because he encountered Killmonger.
Agreed. Hey, there he is. Big ups for the Stan Lee cameo. Don't worry.
This, by the way, I think this is what I call the James Bond sequence in the movie. Mm-hmm. This is Ryan Coogler saying, this is what I'd do if I got to direct a Bond movie.
Right.
And it's awesome. It reminds me of those the great scene in Skyfall, or Casino Royale has a great, you know, casino, any of the casino scenes in Casino Royale. But this is like right out of a James Bond movie, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. Especially once we get into this chase sequence where you see all technology and the, you know, kind of espionage elements coming into it. This is outstanding. You know, I agree with you that Ulysses Klaue probably wouldn't have worked as a standalone villain in this movie, but he would have had a chance just because Andy Serkis is so damn charismatic in this role that there would have been a chance that he could have made it work.
He's great, no doubt. He's a super – it wouldn't have had the same philosophical or narrative weight.
It wouldn't – yes, I agree. It would not have been as good as it wound up being. Probably.
Also, the way he's walking in this scene looks like he should be teaming up with Shawn Michaels to fight The Undertaker and Kane here at the end of this week.
Yeah. Or perhaps he should play Vince McMahon in that Pandemonium biopic.
You know, I bet he could pull it off, Nick.
I bet he could, too.
They'd have to put him in lifts, but he could do
and
it.
Shoulder pads.
Yeah. Hey there, pal. Just teach him how to say pal and what else? And Dave. And he's pretty much got it.
Oh, and you fucking nerds! Or whatever the hell.
Oh, I love it.
I got the impression by that discussion was not well received by some members, but that's another topic for another time.
Listen, I'm not interested in tea. Have you heard that term, Nick?
Tea? No, I don't know what that is.
People say that now online to say that's their way of saying, hey, this is how we gossip about people. We spill the tea.
Oh, we spill. Okay, I see what you're saying. All right. Yeah. You know, have you there's a new show you probably get lots of tea spilling on. Have you heard of Dick in the Booty?
Dick in the Booty?
Yes.
I mean, I may have encountered a search or two in my day, but no, I don't know what you're referring to in this case.
I'll tell you offline.
Good Lord. What are we do? What are we doing here?
Let's just suffice it to say that certain drama-seeking individuals and who are mutual friends of ours have started their very own talk show on Facebook Live called, guessed it, Dick.
Frank Stallone?
In the Booty.
Oh. Holy mackerel, Nick. I had no idea about that. That is interesting information.
Is it?
It? Not to our listening audience, no. But, wow, this scene is great.
Yes. Forgive us for the random asides.
Yeah, this is phenomenal. This is such a good – this is better than I even remember it.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Forgot. This was like my favorite sequence in the movie.
Right.
I guess this is technically a fight scene. So this
yeah, I mean, it's an action sequence. Yeah.
But I wouldn't
classify it as a fight scene necessarily, because really the fighting for him is over now. Now it's going to transition into the chase bit pretty.
Well, you have to remember, I'm a couple seconds behind you.
Look at this. That's a cool thing. I wanted to see more of that, the arm gun device thing.
Is that anything like Arm Fall Off Boy?
Arm Fall Off Boy. Yes, it should be. Denzel ate it. Is what that is.
His arm, damn it. No, this is really awesome. What a great sequence. I don't know what else to say about it. Like, it's Coogler does such a good job of putting together a compelling scene. Probably the most, one of the most compelling action scenes, and certainly the most compelling scene outside of a Captain America movie.
Yeah, I was about to say we've had some really good ones in the Captain America films, both both Winter Soldier and Civil War. But I'm struggling to think of any other really good chase sequences in any of the other movies, and I am coming up blank at the moment.
I guess you could argue one of the like flying chase things in the Iron Man movies,
even remember there being a chase bit in Iron Man.
Really, yeah, I guess he's not really chasing. They're just flying through the air fighting each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is outstanding. This is another – and just such a sleek movie. It just looks so cool. Like, I remember watching this in the theater on the big screen and with the surrounds and everything, and it's just a cool aesthetic. I know that's not a very technical way to describe it or
no, but I believe they said they were in Hong Kong here. Is that correct? Or Seoul? Which one?
I think it's in Seoul.
Well, anyway, it's an Asian, you know, culture, a city dipped in Asian culture. So there's lots of neon going on. You know what I mean? So it's
right.
The juxtaposition of the neon against the monochromatic Black Panther suit. It's just a good visual look for a fight, or I mean, for a chase scene.
And that's the cool. Shuri
shredding kind of, shredding the top of the vehicle like it's nothing. That was awesome.
Yeah. And Shuri driving the simulated car behind is another awesome idea. Yeah, damn, this is good stuff. We're also seeing this is kind of the beginning of, largely the beginning of the growth and the character arc of T'Challa going beyond the borders of Wakanda and kind of setting the course for what's to come later in the film when we end this film, Wakanda goes public basically for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a huge development, not just for this movie, but for sure of the MCU, potentially depending on how we recover from the events of Infinity War.
Right.
Another beautiful shot here.
Yes. Sorry, I'm just watching the scene.
Yeah.
Now, this is one thing I thought. This is going to be the first instance we're going to see this kinetic discharge deal. And that was one thing that later on in the film, I felt like they went to that well a few too many times, you know, to where it became repetitive a little bit. But that's really the only nitpick I have.
Yeah, similar to Wonder Woman with the
With the gauntlets thing, which I know, that's part of her character. But you can't do it. You can only do it so many times without it becoming...
Well, it loses effect if you overdo it. Right. Yeah. Because I don't have an issue with it. Same thing here. I don't have an issue with it per se, but it does lose its effect if you overuse it. And so I would agree with that. That's a minor nitpick, but I would agree with that.
That was cool.
And while we're talking about minor nitpicks, you kind of already mentioned my minor nitpick, which comes later in the film. The climactic fight scene is a little underwhelming, and the CGI is not great in it. But other than that, and what we just talked about, almost there. That's I love when the seat kind of just skids to a stop. You know, he's awesome. Tremendous stuff here. Everything else in this movie is awesome. The acting is phenomenal. The directing is phenomenal. The special effects. And Nick, we haven't even talked about just what a success he was.
Oh, obviously, massive.
Pretty much anyone knows it if they're listening here. Not just a critical hit, as we'll talk about later, but this was a movie that was made on a budget of, let's go on the high end, $210 million. And has grossed $1.347 billion at the box office. Mm-hmm. Billion. Add to that home video. Add to that streaming rights. And you're looking at one of the most profitable big hero movies probably of all time.
Yeah.
Unquestionably of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm looking at the grosses right now. Worldwide, Black Panther is the ninth highest grossing film of all time.
Incredible.
Behind only Avengers: Age of Ultron and Avengers: Infinity War in terms of superhero efforts.
Incredible, and kind of new that it would be a hit, Nick. We both knew it would be a hit, but I don't think even in our wildest dreams we thought it would be the ninth highest grossing film of all time.
Right, and probably going to climb. You know, these films always get minor re-releases. It's only, I'm looking at it right now, it's only $60 million behind Avengers Age of Ultron. So as the years go forward, re-releases and whatnot, I'm sure that will be carried forward.
Well, let's talk about one of the more talked about aspects of this film, I think, afterwards. I don't want to say controversy, but we talked so much about Michael B. Jordan and the character of Killmonger and how important he is in this film and how important he is to the greater MCU. They make the decision in the story here to kill off Killmonger, as a lot of the MCU movies have killed off their villains. But I think none with more of an upsetting result than the way that they kill Killmonger in this movie. Now, Not because the scene is amazing. It's one of my favorite scenes in the MCU to this point, period. It's incredible. It is moving. It is emotional. It is the right ending. It is the right move for the story that they're telling.
Right.
And yet, is there not a part of you that thinks, damn, what a waste to have Killmonger off the board?
There is. The closest thing I would – the closest parallel I would draw is Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight. Like, there's always going to be a part of me that wishes he lived and we would have seen more of him and we would have gotten you know, another story with that character. But the majority of me knows and recognizes that for the purposes of telling this complete story, kind of had to go that way. In my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And as painful as it is to lose that good of a character, so painful, in fact, that my voice is cracking just thinking about it. I think that was you couldn't write a better ending for a character. You just couldn't. That was kind of the Logan ending for villains, if you will. An absolutely perfect way for this quote unquote villain, I'll call him an anti-villain, to go out. Just a really well done sequence, really well done ending. So I understand why people are upset off the board that he's gone, but I don't think the movie. I think it added so much power to this film to have that sequence in. So, ultimately, the right move.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, with that being said, Nick, I mean, I don't know what else we can say about this because this is one of the more kind of just.
If we go on too much longer, we'll just sit here and watch the entire movie, and we don't have
don't have time. We don't have time. Ain't nobody got time for that. In fact, so let's wrap it up here. Any final thoughts on Black Panther before we get to our usual array of rankings and whatnot?
It's outstanding. I really don't have any much else to add. I really enjoy this film. It was a cultural phenomenon. It was arguably next to Iron Man and perhaps even above Iron Man, the most important of the MCU movies. Iron Man, for what it launched in terms of the film industry, a true cinematic universe that hadn't really been done before, and Black Panther in terms of what it meant culturally within the film industry. So, massively important. I enjoy the movie a lot. Don't know what else to say.
Couldn't agree more. This was a movie that needed to happen. It delivered in a way that is inspiring and left a mark that will never be erased. It is one of those landmark movies in the superhero genre that will be remembered, I think, forever. It's going to be one of those we talked about with Superman the Motion Picture or Batman 89. This is going to join that pantheon of important film and among not just important. I don't want to just sell it as being important because it's also one of the best that we've seen. A great movie, deserving of all the love that it's gotten. Now, speaking of the love that it's gotten, this is the part of the show where we like to go to the rankings, and before we get to our rankings of the MCU to this point in our journey, let's talk about what the critics and the fans had to say, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the 18th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and just to remind you real quick, we've taken a combination of three scores, Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, and IMDb, all 1 to 100, meaning the maximum is 300. So here we go. We're going to go 18 to 1. At 18, Thor the Dark World with 190 points. At 17, The Incredible Hulk with 196. At 16, Iron Man 2 with 200. At 15, Thor with 204. At 14, Iron Man 3 with 213. At 13, Captain America the First Avenger with 214. At 12, Avengers Age of Ultron with 215. At 11, Ant-Man with 219. At 10, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 with 227. At 9, Doctor Strange with 236. At 8, Captain America the Winter Soldier with 237. 7, Spider-Man Homecoming with 240. At 6, The Avengers with 242. At 5, Captain America Civil War with 244. At 3, Thor Ragnarok with 245. At 2, or excuse me, I messed up somewhere along the way, but 3rd is Guardians of the Galaxy with 248. Iron Man is 2 with 251. And the new champion with 259. That's a 97 from Rotten Tomatoes, an 88 from Metacritic, and a 74 from IMDb is Black Panther with a total of 259.
Awesome. Awesome stuff, Nick. And let's get to our rankings then. So, Nick, you want to go first?
If you would like. I see you making your edits to your sheet right now. Are we going 1 to 18 or 18 to 1?
Well, you pick, man. Dealer's choice.
And then I'll go, you know, I like to count them down, so I'll go 18 to 1. At 18, I have Ant-Man. At 17, I have Iron Man 3. At 16, I have The Incredible Hulk. At 15, I have Thor the Dark World. At 14, I have Doctor Strange. At 13, I have Iron Man 2. At 12, I have Thor Ragnarok. At 11, I have Captain America the First Avenger. At 10, I have Thor. At 9, I have Black Panther. To me, there's a line between the bottom 9 and the top 9. And Black Panther is firmly in that top 9, but I couldn't put it ahead of the other films that we're about to talk about or on list right now. Because at 8, I had Iron Man. At 7, I had Guardians of the Galaxy. At 6, I had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. At 5, I had Spider-Man Homecoming. At 4, I had The Avengers. At 3, I have Avengers Age of Ultron. At 2, I have Captain America Civil War. And still, number 1, I have Captain America The Winter Soldier.
A very interesting, if flawed, list. Mm. At number 18, I have Doctor Strange. At number 17, I have The Incredible Hulk. At 16, Thor the Dark World. 15, Thor. 14, Captain America the First Avenger. 13, Ant-Man. 12, Spider-Man Homecoming. 11, Iron Man. 10, Iron Man 3. 9, Iron Man 2, 8, Avengers Age of Ultron, 7, The Black Panther. As Nick said, a great movie that belongs in this upper pantheon. I think it's a significant step above Avengers Age of Ultron. Ultimately, I couldn't move it ahead of Guardians, but I waffled back and forth on that one, certainly deserving of its spot among the best. Moving on to number 5, I have Guardians of the Galaxy. 5, I have The Avengers. 4, I have Thor Ragnarok. 3, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. 2, I have Captain America the Winter Soldier. And at number 1, to this point, I have Captain America Civil War. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we have given our rankings, we want to hear your rankings. Join us on Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook and submit your list as soon as this show is posted and shared. We want to see your rankings to this point, hear your thoughts on Black Panther. Also, tweet us. I'm at gphillips8652. He is Duke87. And we don't mind if you slide into our DMs.
We do not. Feel free.
Feel free, and you can also email the loneliest email addresses on the internet. Well, mine is gregp@placetobenation.com. I understand that Nick's email, nickd@placetobenation.com, has been getting a lot more traffic lately.
It has. I've gotten I'll have you know, I got an invoice from staplesordering.com.ca asking me to update my payment information. So I was ushered to go ahead and do that, so that was good.
Yes, I actually went ahead and proactively sent them my social security number, the one that was sent to me,
which is probably the best. So yeah, that's all well and good.
Awesome. Well, that's also where you can send your ballots, folks. The deadline is Friday, November the 2nd.
So there's a very good chance that by the time you're listening to this, you've already missed the deadline, but maybe not.
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
And if not, then please submit your ballots of our Place to Be Nation fantasy comics draft to Nick D at PlaceToBeNation.com. Now, all that being said, our next Hard Travelers for Hire is going to take us to Avengers Infinity War, one of the biggest superhero movies of all time, and for that we may just have to get a special guest for the show,
Nick. Oh, no. You're not going to do it to him, are you?
I think I might.
Oh, God. He's going to hate you forever.
No, I'm not going to do that. I've got another idea in mind, Nick. I've got an idea.
Biggest Marvel related guest we could possibly get. Is that what you're thinking?
You're picking up the jive that I'm dropping right now.
I like it. Greg. I like it. I approve of this message.
Cut of my jib. Mm-hmm. You're appreciated.
But wait, before we do that, Greg, you know, December brings us another theme month because, you know, next month we've got Aquaman month coming up.
That's right. Aqua month. And we'll be doing a lot of Aquaman-related things.
Yes, we're 2 long book hunts. Greg Phillips can't believe it. 2 long book hunts.
That's right. And we're doing it all to celebrate the release of James Wan's Aquaman.
I believe is how he's going to pronounce it.
Aquaman starring Jason Momoa and a bunch of aquatic life.
And Amber Heard. Let's not forget about her.
And Willem Dafoe.
Oh.
Perhaps he'll be Willem Dafoe in this one. Perhaps both. Now you're telling tales out of Aquaman's skewl. neither here nor there. And as for what we're doing here the rest of this month, well, that's an incredible question, and I'd thank you to mind your own business.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Stop. You know, how about you get off our nuts about it?
Yes, we will, though, at one point this month. We will be reviewing Green Lantern Earth 1 alongside this podcast bicycle, Jennifer Smith, longtime friend and a compatriot of the show, the hard-traveling fan girl herself. She will be here to help us review Green Lantern Earth 1, a book that I better start reading soon or I'll never get it finished by the time we record that show.
That's probably accurate.
It's a good thing to do. Well, with all that being said, we're going to take us a little here, a commercial break. And when we come back on the other side, we've got all the segments you so good. Segments including but not limited to the rundown, reading and watching, the wrestling minute, maybe even a little special something else.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaceToBe Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here, and we want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the PlaceToBe Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the PlaceToBe Podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The PlaceToBe Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Shat on a turtle! I didn't notice you all there. We're back from the break. I'm Greg Phillips. He is Nick Duke. We are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Still the Hard Traveling Fanboys, as we were before that commercial break. Just want to take a minute. As you just heard, I'm going to reinforce a lot of what you just heard. The Place to Nation pop feed is popping like never before. And I just want to scold myself because I didn't say it right. The Place to Be Nation pop feed is popping like never before. We are just rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling lately with shows such as
Hanging
Talking
and Banging.
Pop.
I think is
hanging
the one
banging,
I forgot.
Hanging and Banging. Brah. With shows such as Talking Pop, Geek and Sassy, DC Post Crisis Management, Freak Out Drive In. I mean, gosh, Sunday Groove, Songs with Friends. I mean, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular. Am I missing anything? I'm probably missing something. NBA Team.
Oh, you got it right that time. Congratulations.
Absolutely. Nick's football podcast that had one episode that he said would have more but never did.
Absolutely. Hey, man. Let me tell you something. There is no tradition in all of Place to Be Nation that is finer than that of me starting projects and never finishing them. Not because I don't want to, but just because – no, yeah, just because I don't want to.
Well, you've already left a legacy in that because your unfinished movie tournament that you started years ago bled over into our unfinished 80s music tournament.
That's why I said it was a tradition, sir.
Yes, you've left a mark on the industry.
Hey, remember that greatest comic book movies of all we were going to do last year?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we were going to.
We're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. You know,
we might try it in the spring.
We might try it several years from now, but like that will no longer be classified as part of the Safert, I would argue.
I'm saying we might start it in this coming spring. You never know.
And I'm telling you that you're probably
it won't
wrong.
Happen.
Yeah, remember potting iron that we've been talking about for?
That's true.
God, how long has that been in the works?
Probably since before podcasts were even a thing.
Yes. It's I was like, hey, you know, yeah, like 20 years ago, I was like, hey, you know, one day they're going to have these things called podcasts. And, man, wouldn't potting iron be a great name?
They're basically going to be what we – like radio shows that we have now in 20 years ago time, except fewer people will listen to them.
Right.
And everyone will have a show.
Everyone will have a show, and it'll just be like – two people sitting around talking to each other. Well, a lot of times, they'll be talking to each other about stuff only they care about. So, you know.
Absolutely. And occasionally they will be advertising erectile dysfunction fixes.
Yes. Or mattresses that are shipped to your home in a box.
That share names with famed cartoon ghosts.
May or may not have been friendly. Not for me to say.
Folks, what we're getting at here is a Casper mattress is the way to just alleviate all of your aches and pains after a hard day of work. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all that aside, we are here to give you our weekly look at the news and notes in the comic book world. It is Shut up, Nick. It is a little segment that we like to call... Ooh, it's so good looking. The Rundown.
Welcome to the Rundown. Where we talk some comic news. Welcome to the Rundown. Where we talk about movies too.
Are you about to tell me that the Rundown tastes like money and smells like money and looks like money?
run down.
Yeah, the laugh. That's what you got. Yeah, the laugh that you have to do after every fucking sentence.
My main man. Here to kick off the Rundown, we are going to start with a pretty exciting and yet infuriating set of announcements. And I'll explain why. First of all, we've talked in the past, Nick, about the upcoming Disney streaming app that will be having a Scarlet Witch TV miniseries or limited series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we recently got word this week, in fact, that Paul Bettany's The Vision will have, quote, a large part, end quote, in Disney Play, which is the name of the streaming service, is Scarlet Witch TV series. And, in fact, it may end up being a series that is more about the couple itself. Shut up, Siri. Is more about the couple itself than just Wanda herself. Now, you know that Scarlet Witch and Vision have long been storied history in the comics, one that you will eventually get to in your ongoing Marvel Age podcast right here and, on Place to Be Nation Pop.
And one that was hinted at in our Kurt Busiek and George Perez Avengers run.
That's correct. And so that it seems like we may end up getting a little bit of that Scarlet Witch and Vision action going on the screen. And I, for one, hope that it's a mature-rated show in the vein of the Netflix series, Nick.
So you want to see lots of violence?
No, no, I don't think violence is needed necessarily.
Okay, so what are you looking for here?
I think I'm looking for crude language.
All right, fair enough.
And the other big announcement that's tied to that is somewhat of a surprise announcement that came out this year that another limited series is being developed for Disney Play, and it is going to be a Falcon and Winter Soldier team up. The Falcon and Winter Soldier, Sebastian Stan and Howard Mackey, Anthony Mackey, not former comic book writer and editor Howard Mackey, will be playing their characters.
I know a guy named Travis Mackey. I just thought I'd share.
Okay. No details available about the series except that Malcolm Spellman, the writer-producer of Empire, been hired to write the series. We're about to find. We might get a little. What was that little project you mentioned earlier?
Dick in the Booty.
Interesting. Tables have turned here a little bit. This is really exciting stuff, man. I'm excited to see this report. Falcon and Winter Soldier have awesome chemistry in the movies. They're one of my favorite parts of Civil War, which is my MCU movie to this point, anyway, in our Hard Travelers for Hire series. And I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities for the story, Nick.
Yeah, I'm pumped about both of these. Obviously, and Scarlet Witch should be pretty cool. And then you got Falcon and Winter Soldier. It's a little surprising. That one caught me a little bit off guard because you would assume that one of those is probably going to
take over
the mantle of Captain America. And perhaps that's what the basis of this miniseries. You know, it's hard to – not for us to say, quite frankly. But let's just hope that – the Empire guy can find,
he said with tear stain.
He can find something more than that one note trick he's been beating into the ground for the better part of what feels like a decade, even though it hasn't been.
Yeah, that was clearly spoken with disdain.
Yeah, it clearly was.
Winter Soldier and Falcon, I have an idea for what the story could be. I'm not saying it will be. I have no idea if it will be. It probably won't. But do you remember the Batman story, Battle for the Cowl? I was thinking that maybe this could be something along those lines. Not where they're actually fighting each other to see who becomes Captain America, but the point of the story being the inheritance of Captain America's
mantle. Right. They face some kind of threat, and eventually along the way it becomes obvious that there has to be a Captain America for some reason. It becomes this... Well, who should do it? Not that they are, like you said, they don't necessarily need to be in conflict over wanting to do it, but all over the course of the story, it becomes apparent, you know, who the correct successor is.
I've even got the perfect framing narrative structure for it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear it?
Sure.
I would have a woman character, let's say Sharon Carter in this case. Doesn't have to be Sharon Carter. It could be any woman character. I would have her become a journalist because she wants to become a journalist.
Right. And she'd walk in one day to a newspaper and go, yeah, I would like to be a journalist. And they're like, well, that's great. We were looking for a journalist. You're hired at a salary of $135,000 a year.
For your first assignment, we're gonna fly to Zanzibar and pay you for a year to work on an opinion article.
Right.
And
when you come back, our entire front page will be taken up by nothing but that opinion article. Go forth.
And she's going to then go to Zanzibar and work on her article, and we'll hear her narration over the course of these, let's say, 8 episodes of this show. Well, the title of her article is going to be this show will be seeking an answer. Must there be a Captain America?
And then, of course, she'll write that one. And then by the end of it, she'll write, "Why there must be a Captain
America." Must be a Captain America. That's exactly right. I think it's perfect. In fact, I feel like Marvel should send me some money just for coming up with it right now. But they won't, because that's not how they operate. Anyway, here's why these announcements are infuriating to me, Nick. I made it very, very clear months ago with my mockery and derision that I wasn't interested in getting no Disney play. I don't have any interest in Disney's back catalog necessarily beyond what I have. I could find it elsewhere. I could watch TV, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any interest in the Star Wars catalog. I own all the ones that I want to own on DVD or Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and they drop original MCU content. Mm-hmm. Legitimate original MCU content, not fake MCU TV content like we got with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all the rest of them. And the Netflix shows even. Real MCU content. And you know what, Nick? Damn it, it's going to work.
Yep.
I'm going to get it. I'm getting service. This I'm not going to want to, but I'm going to do it.
This is all just added content for me because I was already all in for the Jon Favreau Mandalorian Star Wars TV show that looks – I'm so excited about that.
Do you know who's going to be – there's going to be some odd streaming services out if this happens, Nick. Someone's going to have to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the WWE Network.
Nope.
They're not going to eat it.
I know where this is going.
And they're going to have to up their game.
Say it.
They're going to have to up their game. At DC is going to have to up their game.
Ooh.
If they want to keep it a year from now. But that's not the only one, though.
What else do you have?
What else do I have? Glad you asked, Nick. I'm going to tell you what else I have. I have Amazon Prime.
Okay. Do you pay for that?
I do.
You directly pay for Amazon Prime?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay.
The reason is I get a college discount on it for having a .edu account.
Fair enough.
But it's $50 a year, so it's not bad.
Yeah, it's really not bad. That's cheap.
But here's the other one. The other one here is the Sling TV gimmick here. Now, literally, the only thing that I watch on Sling TV right now, because I would like to watch New Japan, I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I watch right now are Raw and SmackDown.
And football.
Well, actually, no, because I have been watching the ESPN app to watch most of my football, and I have CBS All Access that I'm only getting for football season and will end after football season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, the day that football season ends, that's it for CBS All Access. But the Sling TV gimmick I am primarily using for wrestling right now because I'm watching so much football. Now, I pay $5 extra on top of the $25, very reasonable. By the way, baseline price, $5 on top of that for DVR, and I'm paying $10 for NFL Red Zone.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's not just NFL Red Zone. It's the sports package, but that's all.
Is there a point buried in any of all this?
The point in all this is if Sling TV keeps screwing up my DVRs on Raw, which it did again this week, I'm going to have to dump Sling TV to get this Disney play. I don't want to do that.
Uh-huh.
I don't make that decision. And if you're a representative of Sling TV and you're listening to this podcast, as unlikely as that may be, I suggest you fix my DVR issues.
And so how would you watch everything? I'm confused now.
Well, I would use all this ESPN and all those other things.
Yeah, Raw and SmackDown primarily.
SmackDown I would watch on Hulu, and then on Raw I would probably have to watch the edited down Hulu version. I don't want to do that.
Mm.
I mean, certainly I don't want any thrilling
No. If I've got to sit through 3 hours of the bullshit, you should too.
That's a good point. That's fair. Nah, but I'm just saying, there's a lot that can change between now and then. We'll see what happens. Also, CBS All Access, they're insane for charging what they charge.
What do they charge? I don't even know what they charge.
It's like, I think it's like $7 a month, which doesn't sound bad until you realize that's $2 a month less than what I pay for WWE. And the amount of content you get is, there's barely anything on it.
They're literally trying to sell that on sports and Star Trek alone. I mean, that's all they have.
Yeah.
To the point where they're already, that offline, I laughed a minute ago because I was scrolling through Newsarama articles, because one of them was an animated comedic Star Trek show that's coming to CBS All Access, which is in addition to Star Trek Discovery, I believe it's called, that's on right now, and the Resurrection of Next Generation that's going to have Patrick Stewart in it. So that's three.
Now that's cool.
That's three. But that is three separate Star Trek shows that are presumably going to be in development simultaneously and running simultaneously. They are trying to sell you a Star Trek streaming service, essentially.
Basically,
yes. You know. To each their own. If there were a Star Wars streaming service, I would probably have it. If there were, three concurrent brand new Star Wars shows available. But, that's just one of those things.
Yeah, but price point, man. Like that's what kills me on it. If it was like $3 a month, I could see that. That's reasonable. I'll pay that. And I'm paying this. But, I'm on CBS Access. Honestly, now that I have Red Zone, I'm going to cut it off the day of the freaking SEC championship game that night, as soon as it's over. Bye-bye, CBS. Get out of here, Army, Navy. Sorry.
Well, now you are not a – you are no patriot, sir.
I'm not going there, Nick. You're not gonna bait me into tackling the service academy, sir, when it comes to football or anything else.
You can't tackle them because you would try to choose one option to tackle them, and there are two options that would be unaccounted for.
Now, Nick, you know as well as I do that if any team were to run with three different options, they'd be unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Unstoppable. There's no way.
Well, you know what else is unstoppable is the momentum of the CWDC universe. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it continues building every season, and this year's no exception. All the shows have been rolling right along with forward momentum, yes, which is what happens when you roll. You gain forward momentum. So, in any event, but one thing that some viewers of The Flash in particular have, including my mother, noticed that I initially dismissed, is that Joe West has been very stationary this season. He hasn't been moving around. He's been very almost static and unenergetic. And at first, I thought nothing of it, but over the course of the last couple episodes, the second episode being the most recent one I watched, it was obvious that he wasn't standing, he wasn't moving, and he looked, he looked lacking in that Joe West energy. And now we know why, because a report came out today that Jesse L. Martin, who plays Detective Joe West, is being forced to take a leave of absence due to a back injury that he has suffered. Apparently he suffered it during the show's summer hiatus, and the injury is so debilitating that he has not been able to move around much on set. So he's going to take time off, hopefully heal up, get better. They do expect him back on the show. This is really sucky news, though, Nick, because Joe is irreplaceable. He's such a key cog on that show that keeps the heart of that show intact, that it's going to suck to see him go. And I guess it's a good thing that they brought a version of Wells again, because they're going to need him to kind of anchor that veteran presence on the show.
Well, and again, it's just a leave of absence. And, we don't know how long that will be. A lot of episodes for this season have already been filmed. So, depending on how long it is, it's very, very possible that he could be around for more episodes this season, take a leave of absence, and still be back before the end of the season. In fact, I would argue that's probably even likely, because they'll probably want to resolve, even if it's a small appearance in the season. But with all the departures in recent months from the DCCW universe, they've always been very open about letting us know when people are leaving. And they have been very open here about saying, no, this is just a leave of absence. So I think that's a good sign that he will be back. Sooner or later.
Yes, they did a good job because of the combination of how he's been appearing lately and my natural worries about characters I like. They did a good job of faking me out a little bit in the most recent episode with that. So, good on them. We also have gotten our first look at the live-action debut, the first ever appearance in live-action of the Monitor in the upcoming CW crossover between all shows. LaMonica Garrett, we got the first publicity image of him as the Monitor. And, Nick, this is so much more comic book accurate than
I would have expected. I was expecting just a dude, essentially. I was expecting, you know, like an attractive CW-looking actor who just, it's revealed, like, has a literal monitor station somewhere, you know, that he can look at all these things or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm stunned by this. It makes me both excited and terrified about the prospects of one day adapting the Anti-Monitor. Because on the one hand, this shows they might be willing to go very comic book accurate with it. On the other hand, they don't have the budget to pull off
to be comic book
a convincing version of the Anti-Monitor, in my opinion. They struggle.
You know what would help them? You know what would help them with that budget, Nick?
What's that?
If they were to get an opportunity to create a movie with a budget of a movie, then they could probably do the Anti-Monitor very comic book accurate.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
As we all know, they just don't deserve the opportunity.
They're TV actors, TV writers, TV producers. They just don't get the movies. So
they can't deal with the nuance of Lex Luthor forcing a senator to suck a lollipop.
They can't deal with the character development, the gravitas, what it says about the human condition to have the Flash shift his eyes from one side to the other side and then back to the side he started on. Just, I mean, that's the piece de resistance.
That's very good, Nick. I liked hearing you say that. And also, to show you the level of control that Nick Duke asserts over my life, as he was talking about his eyes from one side to the other, I was doing that with my eyes, each direction that he said.
Were you looking nervous and thinking about how you don't have any friends and how you're not really like any version of the Flash that's ever been written in a comic, and you're just the shittily written comedic version that they felt they needed because you have to make the movies more like the MCU, and you think that what makes the MCU successful is shitty comedy?
Yes.
Good.
I've often thought of myself as the shitty comedy version of other people.
like Drew Carey, for example.
Oh, come on. Now, Drew Carey himself is a comedian.
I didn't say it. Was I the one who brought up the Drew Carey comparison originally? No, I wasn't.
Yeah, it wouldn't have hurt my feelings coming from you. Anyway, we also got news this week of casting in a DC Universe original series. The animated Harley Quinn series has found its Joker in the form of Alan Tudyk, or as he will forever now be known in DC circles, Alan Turek.
Well done, sir. Well done.
And, yeah, Tudyk has a history with DC. He played Bruce Wayne's cousin, Van Wayne. DC's Powerless. And of course, his greatest role as Redneck Number One in Deadpool 2. Tudyk's a good actor. Really good actor. I'm looking forward. This series really does look good. Remember how good that teaser was? How much better it was than we thought it would be?
Yes.
And that's it. That's all we have.
Yes, it is.
The rundown's over. It's not over. Hard traveling fanboys. No matter how much you want it to be over. No matter how much you want us to just punt to a different week when we're better and have more compelling material to talk about.
Hey, Black Panther was good.
Black Panther was awesome. our discussion of it.
Yeah, it was all right. I gotta say, it was all right.
You know what? Pretty good movie. This is all right.
Yeah.
Anyway, but what we have here is, gosh, our longest running segment, Nick. It's a segment called Reading and Watching.
Reading and Watching. What have you been reading and watching?
Duh.
And playing. Now, let us get started here with what we've been reading. I got nothing, Nick.
Yeah, no.
Have you just thrown in the towel during football season? You'll get to it in January?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I was gone last week. Like, I was on vacation all week. So you would think, hey, it's time to read comics. But no, I actually did this thing where I just slept all day for an extended period, for like 3 days in a row, and it was wonderful. It was one of the best I've ever made. So instead of reading comics, I just slept, and it was so much better than reading comics.
You basically lived out the Chris Farley SNL commercial for Hibernol.
We should do a podcast about sleep and how great it is, and it'd just be the same.
No, sleep.
What about it? It's great, isn't it? Yep, and that's just the same
Nick,
show.
You know, Nick, I noticed over the last week or so, I haven't gotten a lot of I haven't gotten a lot of sleep. I don't feel as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last weekend I slept a lot.
Yeah.
And man, did I feel good.
You felt awesome, and now you're not sleeping, and you don't feel awesome.
That's right. But you know what I'm going to do on Saturday or Sunday to make me feel awesome again?
Sleep?
Sleep, that's right. And visit AJ Lee's Twitter. Who the hell's AJ Lee? I can hear a young punk right now. Who the hell's AJ Lee? Who's AJ Lee? She's only been retired for about 3 years. Get it up. Do a little research. I'm sorry. I don't know what went over me right there, Nick. Read and watch it. Yeah, so we didn't read anything. But we have been watching, haven't we, Nick?
We have.
Now, I will preface this with another now, as I've said 455 freaking times on this podcast for some reason. I did not get a chance, due to traveling out of past weekend, to watch The Walking Dead. Sorry, AMC's The Walking Dead. Nor did I get it to watch Titans on DC Universe. However, I'm planning on catching up in the next few days.
Hey, I watched the second episode of Titans. I did over the
now the second episode of Titans. That would be
the Hawk and Dove one,
in which Hawk and Dove are there. That's right. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, I liked it. It was a pretty good episode. Like you said. It does more to make me care about Hawk and Dove than I ever thought possible. More so Dove than Hawk, I would argue, because Hawk is
a douche.
Portrayed as a massive douche with I struggle to understand what exactly his motivation is for doing what he does, you know, in this, but that's neither here nor there. Raven continues to be outstanding. The guy playing Dick Grayson is really good. I just continue to be the violence of the show does not feel like it fits the story they're telling to me. Gratuitous. It feels like doing something just for the hell of it, not because it actually serves your story.
Mm-hmm.
The shuriken to the eye thing. I'm like, why? Like, what is gained by that? You know what I mean?
Right.
That feels like you're only doing it because you know not because you thought that you actually think it's a good idea. I don't know.
Especially if the story is that Batman has gotten so
right
grim. Like, what is Batman doing to people? Ripping them out and shoving them down their throat?
Batman is actually reenacting the torture sequence from Casino Royale. So somewhere, the Penguin has been duct taped to a chair with the bottom cut out, and Batman is swinging a massive rope into his nutsack over and over again.
But
in the Titan, we're actually seeing the rope, a close-up of the rope, hitting the nutsack and splitting it open and turning it all bloody and purple.
The beauty of it happening to the Penguin, though, is that he's really fat, so his balls are, like, covered up by fat, and his penis is inside of him.
Right. What's that old Metallica song? What's that old Metallica song, Greg? Sad but true.
People come for comic book talk and they get
they get the Penguin's bloody beaten penis. Oh.
Oh gosh! But yeah, no, Titans
is fine. They need to figure out what story they're trying to tell. Just do whatever serves that instead of like thinking, oh, we're not on TV. We can do whatever we want. Let's make this. You know,
I'll admit though. I friggin' loved that opening sequence with Hawk and Dove where Hawk's tied up in the warehouse. I know it was sort of reminiscent of Kick-Ass, but I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, that was pretty good. But that wasn't the scene that cranked up the violence to a ridiculous degree.
It was Dick with the eye thing really just stood out to me. Yeah. So that's interesting. I thought for a moment you were going to say you watched the second episode of AMC's The Walking Dead, but
no.
Sadly.
No. Listen, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. I'm glad you can still find some entertainment there, but that ship has sailed for me. I've seen all I need to see.
Dan Mullen.
Oh, the game that launched what is soon to be a thousand images in the group chat, I'm sure.
Lord, Andrew Garner doing God's work today, by the way. Good stuff. I've lost track of where the CW show. So, gosh, what starts us off now in our cycle? I'm confused.
Is it Arrow?
Arrow came back with the second episode of its new season last week. Mm-hmm. We talked about how the mirror was probably one of the best episodes of the series to date. And they come out swinging in episode two with another good one. They come right out. They're dropping us into the ongoing quest to find Diaz amongst the Star City citizens. Meanwhile, Oliver himself is trying to gain information about Diaz, but he's trying to do it inside prison. And we're really actually seeing Nick in a way that maybe it was my cynicism that didn't expect them to actually follow through. Something that the producers and Stephen Amell have talked about, which is wanting to explore Oliver Queen having to make difficult choices and having to do things that may not be morally scrupulous. Including in this episode, what I thought was one of the most true to Oliver Queen ways to get out of that situation that they could have come up with. Mm-hmm. He's in a no-win situation. He has got to find this information out to protect his family, and he is asked to either kill this security guard who is an asshole but has done nothing to deserve getting killed or get him fired or get him shot out willingly, which is not going to happen. And so Oliver does the only thing that he knows how, and he comes up with an ingenious way to get out of this situation that is still probably going to end up costing this guy his job. But at least the guy keeps his life. And Oliver, you know, lives up to the bargain. We don't know if Brick is going to end up live up to his end of the bargain. But all of that stuff was great. We get to see Diggle have this badass fight scene with Ricardo Diaz on a train. Really well done. The supporting cast continues to be 150 times better than it was last year.
Yes, I think because they are using them in the right proportions. Like, they recognize that right now, Curtis and Wild Dog and Dinah, well, mostly Curtis and Wild Dog, don't have very complete material for them. So rather than featuring them over and over again for no real reason when it serves no purpose, they're smartly letting them fade into the background for now. When they come up with an intriguing direction for them, I'm sure they'll bring them back to the forefront. But right now, they're honing in on Felicity, Diggle, and Ollie. Which, by the way, they should probably be doing all the fucking time.
All the time, absolutely. And let's not leave out the flash forwards. Oh. As we continue to find out more information about William and more information about Roy Harper in the future and more implications of what that could mean for Star City's present.
That, again, this new dynamic they've invented with the flash forwards, brilliant. It's one of the most intriguing aspects of this season. One thing I thought was interesting, not even of the new Green Arrow. So we're not even in this episode. We're not even hitting back to that. So that was interesting. But no, I loved this episode. Loved pretty much everything. up until the final, the what is supposed to be the big cliffhanger instead left me groaning with displeasure.
Yes, I did the same thing, Nick. I actually let out a when they reintroduced the FBI character from last year, Samantha something.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her last name. Anyway,
it was like the Vince as the higher power reveal. Oh, son of a bitch.
So I'm not super pumped about her coming back because I don't think she's a very good actress or character. But that being said, this new direction, this new season is just knocking it out of the park. It's taken the criticism last year and improved on everything to this point.
And as long as everyone is just so damn miserable, I'm probably going to continue to love it.
Nick loves seeing his characters in pain and suffering.
Yes.
So, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
This was great, too.
Let's go to the exact opposite. Because, again, variety is the spice of life.
Right.
And Legends of Tomorrow has carved out its niche in the CW-verse, the Arrowverse, as doing things that other shows can't and won't do. Right. Being the zaniest, craziest, arguably most comic booky of all the shows. And boy, oh boy, they outstanding in this season premiere with a trip back to the night, two trips actually, back to the 1960s. One to the Beatles' arrival at the beginning of the episode, and then one later on back to Woodstock.
Yes.
Complete cameos from Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Jerry Garcia, among others. And we get John Constantine sort of back on the show and seemingly moving in the direction of joining the team, although he's very hesitant to do that. He's not in favor of it right now. Clearly that's where it's heading. And we also get more of the continued dynamics, the interpersonal dynamics with Ava and Sarah.
Yes, we do. Gotten decent.
And we continue to get we get to learn more actually about Nate and his history as he gets to kind of meet his father in present day, and as does Mick Rory.
His father, by the way, played by Thomas Wilson, he of Biff Tannen fame from the Back to the Future trilogy.
Yes, you know, when I first saw him, I thought it was Tim Robbins.
No, it was Thomas also. Voiced Tony Zucco on Batman the Animated Series.
Wow, I did not know that. Boss Zucco. He wasn't a boss. He was just Tony in the animated series. But it was such a good scene. We don't really get to see Nate and Mick together that much, like on a pairing, and it was really great to see that. Of course, Ray is still trying to find Nora Dark, who he is smitten with. And ladies and gentlemen, all you need to know about this episode is there is a murderous unicorn that vomits rainbow dust on people that causes them to have acid trips. It is amazing. It is really delightful. It was one of the most fun things that I saw on television all week.
Yes, it was ridiculous. It made little to no sense, and yet it was a ton of fun. Bringing back John Constantine, Matt Ryan as John Constantine, always add something to the show. This was great, man, all around.
Yeah, everybody contributes to this show. Everyone fills their role perfectly. Great acting, great directing, great writing, fun, off the wall. You can just tell how much fun everyone has. There's a scene in the beginning, Nick, a completely meta scene, where they're openly talking about the show's poor ratings. How amazing is that?
Yes. Yes. It was pretty awesome.
Fantastic show. So then let's move on to Tuesday night with The Flash. As this was a case of a little bit of up and down. The down, well, let's start with the up. The up being continued fun dynamic between Barry and Nora, his daughter, as they continue to get to know each other and... he's trying to be there for her and support her while he's going through a period of self-doubt and blaming herself for screwing everything up. And also trying to, in some ways, whether he realizes it or not, be a dad to her. Also, we are seeing Cisco continue to struggle with the aftermath of his relationship problems. Caitlin and Ralph kind of bonding a little bit on a mission to uncover more about her past. But the big up for this episode, I think it would be Nick, was the addition of this year's version of Wells, which of course is Sherlock.
Yes.
And he was awesome.
He was great. He was fantastic. Every version of Wells is great. And plus, we got a nice little cameo from Hare Wells, who I was hoping briefly to meet the full-time Wells just for a moment.
This scene was awesome because of how it was set up. Yes. Because of Cisco being so certain that this guy was going to be a jerk like he was last year, and instead he's fawning over Barry and Iris and Nora, and their reactions were just priceless.
Yes.
It's so cool to see like Team Flash smiling and having fun again, and that was like Barry's reaction, and Barry, to his credit, Grant Gustin delivered this so perfectly when the guy leaves, I don't know what you're talking about, that guy was great! It reminds me, Nick, of our dynamic in a way, where you'll meet somebody and instantly hate them, and I'm like, oh, he's all right. Only to, years later, find out that you were right the whole time, probably.
No, I am about that. But yeah, it was, that was fun. The whole episode was really pretty good. We get a little bit more of like you said, Nora and Barry. My only issue with this episode,
I think it's going to be the same as mine,
which is an issue that I've had from the, is always skeptical at best in regards to the casting of Chris Klein as Cicada, the big bad for at least these first portion of the season. And even with the Flash, you know, the Flash has a tradition now of big bads who have modulated voices, and typically what will happen, like what happened in season one with First Flash, or season two with Zoom, or season three with Savitar, you will get an actor playing the character and a different actor doing the voice. Well, here with Cicada, you get Chris Klein playing the character and doing the voice, and it is a terrible voice, Greg. I know it's been modulated, but his cadences, his delivery of things, it is just the most wooden thing imaginable. I am not optimistic for. Eventually, they're going to do what Supergirl did this week and do like a big episode that features almost entirely this guy's backstory. And I am worried that Chris Klein is not going to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, I agree with all that, Nick. I thought he was the weakest point. And whether it was just him or that horrible voice they gave him, it sounds so corny and not scary or intimidating at all. I'm not feeling Cicada at this point. I hate to say that because they're going to be a big part of the show in the first half anyway. But I kind of hope they move past him quickly because I'm just not hooked yet. I get it. He has a sick daughter and it's an attempt to add sympathy to him. I'm sure it's going to be that she's ill because of metahumans in some way. I'm just, the performance, the presentation are not there for me to this point. However, still, very fun, very good episode due to everybody else. Black Lightning, continuing chapter three of, what is it called, the Book of Something?
Consequences,
yeah. Another cool opening sequence here in this episode as we feel, we see... the next step in Khalil and his development in this episode as a right-hand man of sorts for Tobias Hoyle. A lot of developments in this episode, Nick. We see the I don't want to spoil everything about it, but they have Tobias Hoyle's arc take an unexpected detour. I didn't see coming.
No, I didn't.
And obviously, it's going to their credit. It's going somewhere. I don't know where, but clearly, it's going to tie into what's been going on with Khalil. You see characters making decisions and going in different directions that are probably going to end up in bad places, including members of Jefferson's family making Anissa and making choices that are almost assuredly going to backfire in some way. Also, I'm not entirely convinced that the church is actually going to use that money for the right purposes, but we'll see.
No, nor am I.
Which
we must remind people, the right purpose is to raise the exactly $500,000 to sue the government.
And now to raise the exactly $300,000 they need to save this clinic.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff was good. Anissa was oddly comfortable with Gamby just gunning down one of those criminals that was coming after her. That being said, Gamby's been a lot better this season. And the addition of a mad scientist character of sorts, who is going to be working with Lynn in the on the pod people. That element I'm a little less sure of, but everything else here was great. I'm a big fan of this show in general. The feel, the dialogue. I think it tackles difficult issues very, very well. I'm not sure how I feel about the new principal. Feels a little two-dimensional or one-dimensional even. Wasn't really fond of that. But I think that everything else about the show is just killing it, man. They're really going in some interesting directions. They're keeping me guessing. It's not predictable. And it's not like Vince Russo swerves either. So really good stuff. The only other element that I would say that I'm not really as invested in Anissa's personal life as I think I'm supposed to be, because some of her character decisions aren't very sympathetic.
Yeah, if that makes sense. Like, they're not really giving her a good reason for doing anything that she's doing with her love life. She just seems to kind of be randomly blowing in the wind, so I don't know.
Right. I didn't really get it. Like, last week she seemed like she was completely infatuated with this singer girl. Now you don't even see the singer on this episode at all, except in the background. And suddenly she's interested again in this girl from last season who she had no interest in last week.
Right. Makes no sense.
Very strange. But overall, again, liked the episode a lot, Nick.
Yeah, I liked it as well. Another strong episode for, there hasn't really been a bad episode of CWTV this year, I would argue.
Agreed completely. It's time to rank them. I guess since you went first
last week. Supergirl.
Oh, Supergirl. Duh. Yes, duh. Absolutely. Okay, so Supergirl was all about, or largely about, almost entirely about, the origin story of Agent of Liberty, who we have seen in his masked form to this point. Well, it turns out that he's a guy named Ben, who is the son of a character that owns a steel mill and is played by Gregory from The Walking Dead, my namesake. One of our favorite, most hateable villains on The Walking Dead in recent seasons, Gregory. And even though we love to hate him, he is a really good actor. And he plays a somewhat similar character here, a civilian cowardly character, but a bigoted character who is bigoted against aliens and set in his ways. And this is all about how a once decent man, maybe not a good man, but a once decent man in Ben, who's a college professor, breaks and ends up becoming Agent of Liberty, a nationalist, earthist character who is going to battle back against all aliens and try to drive them away in the name of humanity. I have been extremely lukewarm on Supergirl to this point this season. I don't think there's too much doubt about that. I haven't had anything bad to say about it to this point, but to be honest, it has not hooked me up until first two episodes. I thought were just okay, solid enough. This was the first episode of this season that I thought was excellent. I thought it was really well done. Everything that I complained last week, Nick, about how I thought all the James Olsen stuff was heavy-handed and unconvincing, the journalism debates they had, and one-sided, I really, really liked this episode. I thought they handled a complex issue much better than I expected they would given their past, and presented a villain who is not sympathetic in the slightest, but at least give you an understanding of why he's the way he is, how he turned that way. They were patient with the storytelling. They were economic with it. I thought the acting was really good across the board in this one. Absolutely loved how they used the show's own history to kind of chronologically move the story, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah, showing you how the world that they've built over the last three seasons have been affecting the larger population around them from the very beginning, and showing how the escalation of threats that have faced Supergirl have also caused escalation in terms of rhetoric and ideas that have been formed in this guy, Ben Lockwood, who started out as a seemingly decent guy who just really, you know, idolized his father and watched his father through things that eventually caused Ben to adopt his father's – some of his father's worst tendencies and to become radicalized. It's basically showing you how a seemingly decent man can lose his way and become an extremist, a political extremist. So this was all – yeah, this is all good stuff. I really enjoyed it. I've been higher on the season of Supergirl than you have in general to this point, but this was unquestionably the high note thus far.
Yes, he thought that we could be decent men. In an indecent time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where that quote came from, do you?
I do know where that quote came from, sir.
It came from a 1986 episode of the AWA.
It did indeed.
All right, well, let's rank them.
Mm-hmm.
You went first last week, I think, so I'm going to go first this week.
Mm-hmm.
I forget, do we do 4-1 or 1-4?
Now it's 5, by the way, but you make
5. 5, whatever. We'll just go in order. I've got at the top, I've got Legends of Tomorrow for this past week.
Mm.
Number 2, I've got Arrow. Mm-hmm. Very close race, by the way. Number 3, I have got Supergirl, actually. Number 4, I've got Black Lightning. And at number 5, I've got The Flash.
Yeah, I'll go Arrow at 1. I will go Supergirl at 2. I'll go Legends at 3. I will go Flash at 4. Black Lightning at 5.
There you hear it. Well, that's about it for watching, unless there's something else, Nick, that you want to tell anybody about.
Not that I can think of, no.
No playing for me yet. I am going to play Red Dead Redemption, but it's not comic book related. And I don't have time right now.
And you're not going to play it for another 6 months anyway.
You shut your mouth! Well, that being said, that's the end of all that. And that can only mean, Nick, I've got a lot.
Mm.
I'm going to turn it over to you for the wrestling minute because you watched Evolution.
I did. I watched the Evolution pay-per-view. You have not watched it, have you?
Not yet.
No, it was a really good show. Smartly, I was very concerned. The show started at the new standard pay-per-view of 7 p.m. Eastern, and I was very worried that it was going to be a full 4-hour show. What it wound up being was right about 3 hours and 17 minutes, which was good. Didn't overstay its welcome. I would argue it had one all-time classic on it in terms of the Becky Lynch-Charlotte Flair last woman standing match. If you're going to seek out one thing from the pay-per-view, that's it. I thought the main event of the show that immediately followed it wasn't as good as that, clearly, but still pretty good. Nikki Bella and Ronda Rousey did a good job in their match. I also thought the six-woman match was outstanding, that being Sasha, Bayley, and Natalya against the Riot Squad. Good stuff. Kairi and Zayn and Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's title was good. Tony Storm and IO, or however the fuck you pronounce it, Shirai, for the in the Mae Young Classic Finals was good. Yeah, everything delivered here. Even the things that didn't were kept in the short, such as the Battle Royal and the opening Trish and Lita against Alicia and Mickey tag match. So top to bottom, one of the stronger WWE pay-per-views this year.
Very good. Very good to hear, Nick. I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm planning on watching it maybe Thursday or Friday night. And I just saw that too, Nick. I just saw it, bro. We're going to kill off Nightwing.
Shut up.
Anyway, you know, I'm looking forward to catching up on that show maybe over the next couple days. I also need to watch SmackDown Live so I can watch AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan. And then at some point I will watch, or maybe I won't. I shouldn't say on the air whether I will or won't. But there is an event called Crown Jewel coming that will involve the return of
individuals.
Certain individuals who are among the greatest WWE performers of all time.
Hmm. Well, your opinion.
Well, with that being said, Nick, I guess that's pretty much all for our show this week. We hope you all enjoyed.
Wait just a minute, sir. Wait a minute.
What's going on?
Wait just a moment. You know, you mentioned earlier, sir, that we are indeed recording this this show on Thanksgiving. Halloween night. I wish it was Thanksgiving. That would be amazing.
I do too.
Oh, man. Great. People dogging Thanksgiving in the live chats this week, by the way. The hell? Clearly, these people have never been fat in their lives. Don't talk shit about Thanksgiving.
If you're fat, Thanksgiving is like your Valhalla.
Thanksgiving is the best. I don't need anything from you.
You go around. You have to deal with relatives. Big deal. You get to eat.
You eat all day. It's awesome.
Watch football. Yeah. You get to just sleep. Once you're done eating, that's the beauty of it, Nick. You can eat as much as you want.
If you are,
you almost feel sick, and then go sleep.
Yep.
And then wake up, eat some more.
That's right. That's right. If you aren't at least clinically obese, then you I don't want to hear your opinion on Thanksgiving. It has no has no weight with me.
That's exactly right.
In any event, being that it is Halloween night, even by the time you listen to this, it will no longer be Halloween. We thought, you know, why not get into the Halloween spirit? And here to help us do so with a little musical exit, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jim Ross. And today, Mr. Ross is going to take us back to a wonderful time in the 1980s. He's going to take us back to 1984. And he's got a question that he wants to pose to you. And that question is, who are you going to call?
Well, once again, thank you for the introduction. I've been sitting here in the corner, the L-shaped studio. I've been waiting for my chance now. Now, here is how this song is going to go. We're going to do this little intro. It's going to go, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to do that kind of thing right there. You're going to do that. And then it's going to get in, and it's going to sound something like this. Ghostbusters! Now, if there is something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call? You're going to call the Ghostbusters. If there is something weird and it don't look good, who the hell are you going to call Ghostbusters? I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghost. If you're seeing things running through your head, who are you going to call? Danny Hodge. An invisible man sleeping in your Casper mattress. Who are you going to call? The Ghostbusters, including Danny Hodge. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Unless it is the ghost of Don Leo Jonathan. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Unless it is the ghost of George Hackenschmidt. Who you call Ghostbusters? If you're all alone, pick up the phone and call Ghostbusters. I ain't afraid of no ghost. I hear it likes the girls. My boys. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters. If you've had a dose of legal steroids, you better call Ghostbusters. Let me tell you something. Busting makes me feel good. I ain't afraid of no ghost. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Don't get caught alone. No, no. Ghostbusters. When it comes through your door, unless you want some more, I think you better call Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call Ghostbusters? Who are you going to call Ghostbusters? I think you better call Ghostbusters. Bustin' makes me feel good. Who are you going to call Ghostbusters? I can't hear your ass. Who in the hell are you going to call except the Ghostbusters? Louder? Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call Ghostbusters? Who can you call Ghostbusters? Who are you going to call Ghostbusters? Now, can you argue with that? Can you disagree with that? Hell no.
Thank you. It's the greatest show on Place to Be Nation.
Certainly a unique situation.
Ooh, hot traveling fanboys.
Oh, they're pretty, they're skittles.
Hot traveling fanboys. 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 Hot traveling fanboys.
You vicious little son of a bitch.
They're indivisible. They're microwavable.
No, Mr. Eddie.
Ooh, hot traveling fanboy. Oi, 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 oi.
Are you gonna give me fucking anything on this show, or why are we even here?
Close enough to slap dick. Let me answer the fucking question.
Well, Klondike Bill told me that if he ever came across a woman who was extremely clean and well kept, he would tell her to put on pair of sweatpants and a sweatshirt, go take a 2-mile jog, and then come back and see him when she was done.
I believe it was quite sudden and painful.
Our traveling fanboys, 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 our traveling fanboys. Our traveling fanboys.